Welcome to this AAT podcast in the Employment Taxes series, the first one covering Pay-as-You and Settlement Agreements, or PSAs, where I will explain what a PSA is and how it may help your employer or your client. Then I will go on to discuss the taxable expenses and or benefits in kind that might be included in a PSA and explain why. In the final podcast, I will talk you through the process of gathering the information on expenses and benefits to be included in a PSA, and talk through how to put together the computations and calculate the PSA liability. HMRC's website includes some useful guidance on PSAs under the heading of schemes that help reduce your paperwork. You can find this from the homepage by clicking on Expenses / Benefits in the blue employers box towards the top of the page. HMRC tells us that we can cut out end-of-year reporting for minor, irregular, and hard-to-value expenses and benefits. Add in that with a PSA, you just pay the tax on NICs, which may be an option for some employers. The first topic covered under the heading of reducing your paperwork is dispensations, and I have previously touched on the subject of applying for a PLMD dispensation to exclude some specific expense items or benefits in kind from the end-of-year reporting process. But that was in the PLMD podcast, which you can always listen to again. Whenever I look at how to ease the compliance burden, I will always refer to PLMD dispensations as the tool for excluding non-taxable or tax-deductible items. Whereas a PSA is the tool that we can use for excluding certain taxable items from the end-of-year PAYE and or PLMD reporting process. We must remember that applying for a PLMD dispensation involves little cost to the employer, other than perhaps the postage cost for a postal application, and perhaps some professional fees if advice is sought or an advisor is used to make the application. We should remember that nowadays we can do a PLMD dispensation application online. In contrast, there is a cost that has to be considered when including any taxable expenses or benefits in a PSA, because this means that the employer has decided to pick up the bill for the income tax liability and any national insurance contributions liability that has to be paid by someone. The cost to the employer may be more than at first expected because the income tax liability has to be grossed up, effectively charging tax on the tax paid by the employer, which is, after all, another benefit to be enjoyed by the employees or directors. Let us consider the following example. A taxable staff meal that costs £100 at the restaurant would result in an income tax bill of £20 for a basic rate paying employee. When the employer pays that bill, the tax is grossed up, and Class 1B NIC has to be paid on both the benefit in kind and on the income tax paid. The cost then becomes £141, which is made up of £100 for the meal and £41 for the cost of the grossed up income tax, plus Class 1B national insurance contributions. It gets more expensive if the employee or director is a 40% or higher rate taxpayer, because the income tax bill would then be £40, and grossing this up increases the tax cost to £66.66. And then when we add Class 1B NICs on the benefit and on the tax paid, the cost becomes £189.66, which is £100 for the meal, and £89.66 for the cost of the grossed up income tax and NICs. But wait a minute, it becomes a lot more expensive if the employee or director is liable to income tax at the new additional rate of 50%. The income tax due on the £100 meal would be £50 if paid by the employee, but this actually doubles to £100 if the employer pays because of the grossing up. And then the cost increases to £227.60 once the Class 1B NIC cost is added. So look at that, £100 for the meal and as much as £127.60 for the tax and NICs involved. The true cost can come as a bit of a shock, and I always ask clients how much was included in the budget for such costs. Now, whilst that example may turn you off the idea of using a PSA, let us not forget that it may be more expensive if the benefit is instead reported on someone's P11D. And here, let me offer you another example to demonstrate this. This is an actual example where I had experience with a client last year. The company had a celebration for the directors and employees after winning a new order. And the £1,000 cost of the celebration was reported on the P11D of the director. He paid tax of £400 on that benefit in kind. The company paid £138 Class 1A NI contributions, but also paid the director a bonus of £690 to compensate the director for the tax of £400 that he'd paid. £690 less 40% tax and 2% Class 1 employees NIC left him with a net receipt of £400. The company also paid £95.22 employers secondary Class 1 NICs on the £690 bonus. This shows that the total tax on NICs paid on the £1,000 party cost was £1,323. In reality, if the cost had been included in a PSA, the tax rate would not have been 40%, because it would have been apportioned between the employees taxed at 20% basic rate and the one director who was taxed at 40%. Just as an example, if, say, 3/4 of the cost related to basic rate taxpayers and 1/4 of the cost related to higher rate taxpayers, then the tax on NIC's cost would have been only £540 compared to the £1,323 for the P11D benefit and pay adjustment that my client actually used. So the PSA would have been cheaper. Section 2. What is a PSA? A PSA is a statutory but flexible arrangement between HMRC and an employer, which allows the employer to settle in one payment the income tax liability on certain taxable expenses payments and or benefits in kind. This would be where the employer does not want to include the item on the payroll or to report it on Form P11D. In addition to paying the income tax, the employer also has to pay any national insurance contributions due on the taxable expense payments and benefits included in the PSA. And there's also national insurance contributions due on the income tax paid by the employer. The amount of NICs payable when included in a PSA is limited to the employer-only rate of Class 1B NICs. Like Class 1A NICs on the 2010-11 P11Ds, this was 12.8% up to the 5th of April 2011. It is now 13.8%. As already mentioned, the income tax liability must be grossed up so that the employer pays the tax due on the additional benefit of the income tax being paid for the employee or director. HMRC's description of a PSA is that a PSA is a flexible scheme you can use to settle any PAYE tax on NICs due to HMRC on three types of expense and benefit. That is, minor items, irregular items, and items where it's impractical to operate PAYE on or to value for P9D or P11D purposes. If HMRC agrees to include an expense or benefit in a PSA, you won't have to take any of the following steps that might otherwise apply to it. Firstly, you won't have to include the item on an employee's Form P11D, P9D, or the P14 at the end of the tax year. Next, you won't have to put the item through your payroll to work out any PAYE tax or Class 1 national insurance contributions that would be due. And then, you won't have to pay Class 1A NICs on the item at the end of the tax year when reported on a P11D. Instead, HMRC says you will settle the tax on NICs due on the items covered by a PSA with a single payment that includes both the tax due on the expenses and benefits covered by the PSA, and we are told to note that this tax would normally be payable by your employees, usually through their tax code, and that the tax you pay must be grossed up, taking account of the tax rates payable by the employees covered by your PSA. More of that later. HMRC also points out that Class 1B NICs, calculated not just on the value of the items covered by the PSA, but also on the tax paid under the PSA, as I've already explained, has to be paid. Section 3. What can or cannot be included in a PSA? HMRC's guidance on what can be included is that the expenses and benefits must fall into one of the following three groups. Firstly, minor items, such as a small present for an employee in hospital or an employee's use of a pool car, where the conditions for tax exemption don't apply. Next, irregular items, such as expenses of a spouse occasionally accompanying an employee abroad, or relocation expenses in excess of the £8,000 tax exemption threshold. And finally, where items are impractical to operate pay-as-you-earn on, or where it is impractical to determine a value for P9D or P11D purposes, such as shared benefits, maybe shared cars or taxi journeys, for example, where these are difficult to attribute to individual employees. More of that later. HMRC guidance states that we cannot include any of the following items in a PSA. Firstly, cash payments including salary, wages, bonus, or other payments such as cash long service awards. Next, large benefits provided regularly to individual employees, such as company cars or beneficial loans. Next, round sum allowances, perhaps lump sums provided to an employee to take care of all their expenses in a tax year. And then shares where it is very difficult to actually arrive at a valuation. The next item on the list is where an item has already had tax deducted through PAYE. If PAYE has already been operated, the item should not be included in a PSA. Then we have items which are already reflected in an employee's tax code, although this would be difficult for an employer to be aware of, as the employer only gets the code number, not a breakdown of what's included there. And finally on the list are profits arising from various mileage payment schemes and other regular items arising in employee car ownership schemes. I think it may also help you if I quote from the HMRC PSA manual, where further guidance is provided on what can and cannot be included in a PSA. We are told that a PSA does not replace the requirement that employers must operate PAYE on general earnings and return details of expenses and benefits in kind on forms P9D or P11D and P11DB. General earnings that may be considered for inclusion in a PSA consist of taxable benefits provided or made available by reason of the employment with the employer and expenses paid to those employees. The PSA manual says that such items can be included if they satisfy one of the three terms that I've already mentioned. In other words, the minor items, irregular items, and those items where it's impractical to operate pay-as-you-earn or to determine the value for P9D or P11D purposes. In the PSA manual, we have a bit more detail on the minor category, which include incentive awards, reimbursement of late-night taxi fares outside of the exemption, personal incidental expenses in excess of the statutory daily limit, a present for an employee in hospital, staff entertainment, for example, a ticket for Wimbledon, use of a company van, use of a pool car where the conditions for tax exemption are not satisfied, subscriptions to gyms, sports clubs, etc., telephone bills, gift vouchers, and small gifts. And we are told the list is not exhaustive. The PSA manual also provides a list of items that are payable on an irregular basis and can be included in the PSA. And these are relocation expenses, where the amounts concerned exceed the £8,000 tax-exempt threshold, occasional attendance at an overseas conference where not all the expenses qualify for tax relief, expenses of a spouse occasionally accompanying an employee abroad, occasional use of a company holiday flat, one-off gifts which are not minor in nature. Again, we are told this list is for illustrative purposes and is not exhaustive. The PSA's manual list of items that fall in the final category, where it is impractical to apply PAYE or to apportion the value of a particular benefit, which is which has been shared by a number of employees, includes free chiropody care, hairdressing services, Christmas parties and similar entertainment provided by the employer, which do not already qualify for tax relief, the cost of shared taxis home, which do not satisfy the exemption, and shared cars. You will see some duplication there, and again we are told that this list is for illustrative purposes only and that it is not exhaustive. And I would add, we might think of shared use of pool vans as an additional item to be included here. Interestingly, the manual states that these terms have deliberately not been defined, and it tells its readers, which would mainly be HMRC officers, that it should be borne in mind that PSAs were introduced as a practical and flexible solution for dealing with one-off benefits. The manual also points out that items that are regarded as trivial should not be included in a PSA. Now, I think it would be useful if I repeat some of the advice I've given in the PL11D preparation podcast, because items that can be excluded from PL11D and P90 reporting should also be excluded from a PSA, other than the taxable items included in a PSA. So to begin with, exempt annual parties or similar functions within the limit of £150 per attendee is a good starting point, but we must take into account all of the costs, including VAT and any extras for travel, accommodation, entertainment, etc. Next, we should consider excluding the cost of health screening assessments and medical checkups, where the exemption is restricted to one checkup per annum. Late night taxis from work to home, but not from home to get to work, enjoy a limited exemption for no more than 60 journeys per annum. To qualify, there are four conditions to be satisfied, including working late until at least 9 p.m. on an irregular basis, where transport has ceased or it will be unreasonable to use it, and the transport is a taxi or equivalent road transport. I have said before that HMRC has tightened up on the requirement for employees to keep records and for employers to carry out periodic checks. Following the 2011 budget, HMRC is now considering scrapping this exemption altogether. There is an exemption for travel between home and work when public transport is disrupted by strike action. Therefore, the cost of travel and overnight accommodation at or near the workplace would not have to be included in a PSA where the exemption applies. Unfortunately, it does not extend to public transport disrupted by heavy snow or flooding, which has been a problem in recent years, including last winter, and this is one area where we might be looking to include some costs. One company mobile phone is exempt, whether used privately or not. More than one phone would be reportable on the P11D or could be included in the PSA. Childcare vouchers, whether involving salary sacrifice or not, do not have to be reported up to the £55 per week or £243 per month limit, but any excess would normally be reported at Section C of the P11D or could perhaps be included in a PSA if HMRC agrees to this. Returning to the issue of trivial benefits, HMRC guidance on what is trivial benefits tells us that there is no lower limit beneath which benefits are not taxed. It says trivial benefits such as a gift of flowers to celebrate the birth of a child or when an employee is sick need not be included in the PSA. Unlike flowers or another gift given as a reward, say for organising a work event. The provision of free tea, coffee and water to employees is generally exempt, but HMRC tells us that if the exemption does not apply, they will treat the provision as trivial and not taxable anyway. Therefore, we do not need to include such costs in a PSA. If we turn to seasonal gifts, such as a turkey or a bottle of wine at Christmas, these are not reportable on a P11D and being trivial do not have to be included in a PSA. HMRC would probably want to tax more generous gifts, such as a £250 Harrods hamper, and a PSA would be the most appropriate route to deal with this type of reward. Seasonal flu jabs are treated as trivial and welfare counselling is regarded as a minor benefit, as is the provision of equipment and services for employees with a disability, where it is to assist them to work. This could be a wheelchair or the provision of hearing aids. These are treated as exempt and do not have to be reported or included in a PSA, subject, of course, to the relevant exemption conditions being satisfied. Section 4, applying for a PSA. A PSA can be put in place before the start of the relevant tax year, during the tax year, and even after the end of that tax year, but it must be in place before the 6th of July after the end of the tax year to which it relates. So, for example, a PSA for the tax year 2010-11 must be in place by the 6th of July 2011. My advice is always to have the agreements in place before the start of the tax year to which it relates, or as soon as possible thereafter. This allows an employer to limit any national insurance contribution liability to the Class 1B rate, which is the employer-only rate, now at 13.8%. It effectively saves any Class 1 primary national insurance contribution charge that would otherwise arise on the reimbursement of personal expenses or on the provision of a benefit such as taxable vouchers. Where we have a Class 1 primary liability, employees' liability may be at 12% or 2% over the upper earnings limit. And before 6th of April 2011, it was 11% and 1% respectively. Early registration of a PSA, even if there is some uncertainty about what to include in the future, is not a problem, because it is easy to amend the PSA after it has been registered. Items can be added, removed, or amended at any time up to the 6th of July following the end of the tax year that it covers. So, for example, to include taxable relocation costs once it has been realised that such costs have been incurred or the exemption has been exceeded would be a normal thing. As with PLMD dispensations, HMRC has centralised a lot of the PSA work, and to apply for a new PSA, we are told to write to HMRC Local Compliance, Specialist Employer Compliance, Duke's Court, Duke Street, Woking, Surrey, and the postcode is GU215XR. We are also advised to explain when we apply what we want to be included in a PSA and to describe the expenses and benefits to be covered by the PSA. Once HMRC has agreed the expenses and benefits to be covered by the PSA, they will authorise the agreement and send the employer a signed form P626. The form P626 is the agreement itself, and it sets out the items covered and the terms and conditions of the agreement, including when the computations have to be submitted. This is usually by the 31st of August after the end of the tax year. As I have already indicated, we can apply for a PSA at any time, but HMRC warns that the timing of the agreement will affect the items that can be covered. If a PSA is agreed before the start of the tax year, then there are no limitations beyond the minor, irregular, and impractical rules. But if a PSA is agreed during the tax year, we will not be able to include items provided before the date of the agreement to which either of the following applies. Firstly, pay-as-you-earn as or should have been operated on the item, or the item has been reflected in the employee's tax code for the year. HMRC also states that if a PSA is agreed after the end of the tax year, but before the 6th of July, again, we cannot include any items provided during the tax year to which either of the following applies, and that is pay-as-you-earn has or should have been operated on the item, or the item has been reflected in the employee's tax code for the year. The example that I've given to AAT members in the past is of a client that phoned me up one day and said they want to give vouchers out to the factory staff because they've got a big order out on time. And the finance director wanted to give them the vouchers and wanted them to be tax-free. The point I made to the client at the time was that they needed to delay issuing the vouchers to the staff until we had the agreement in place. We therefore went ahead, got the PSA agreement signed up, and once signed up, the vouchers were given out in the staff canteen, and the company were able to pick up the tax bill, Class 1B NICs, and there was no payment of primary Class 1 NICs, which otherwise would have been due if the vouchers had already been given out. Now, when it comes to renewing a PSA, and if there have been no changes since the last PSA was agreed, all you need to do is sign a new PSA agreement on the form P626, which should be issued by the HMRC office that issued the previous PSA. In practice, I find that most tax offices issue these before the start of the year. And again, I just would remind you that it's important to get them signed before the tax year starts, so it shouldn't be put in the non-urgent box and forgotten about. Section 5 summary. A PSA is an annual flexible agreement made between an employer and HMRC to allow the employer to pick up the tab for certain taxable expenses or benefits in kind, thus avoiding the need to operate pay-as-you-earn and or to report the items included on the annual PAYE or P11D returns. In this first podcast on PSAs, we've looked at what is a PSA, how to apply for one or renew one, and what can or cannot be included. In the next podcast in this series, I will look in more detail at the type of costs that are regularly included, how to gather the information required, and how to put together the computations as well as set in a timetable to comply with the payment requirements. I hope you found this Basic Steps PSA podcast useful and that you'll have time to listen to the other one as well. Thank you.